Let's continue in the Kuzari. We're on page 178. And here's a handout. Okay, so page 178 in the Kuzari, paragraph number 4. We are continuing along in our discussion of the virtues of the land of Israel, and specifically sayings of the sages who describe the virtue of Eretz Yisrael. So in paragraph number 4 it says, the sages believe that Egypt had superiority over other lands, and they were able to construct a logical argument from this idea. Now, we know that Egypt has a great superiority because the Torah says, Ki ha'aretz, the land that you're about to come into, Eretz Yisrael, lo k'eretz Mitzrayimi. It's not like Egypt. Asher tizra zaracha, that all you had to do is plant, and v'yishkisa zaracha k'gan hayarak, that all you had to do was just plant, and you can easily irrigate your fields and everything will grow with great ease and hassle-free. There was no problem in Egypt. You had a Nile that would help irrigate your soil. You were not dependent upon meteorological conditions. You didn't have to daven to Hashem for rain. But Eretz Yisrael is different. Eretz Yisrael does not have the same climate. It's more arid than Egypt. And it does not have the same irrigation system, and therefore you're much more dependent upon the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, and we know this, we know for those, you know, there's always a problem about a drought in Eretz Yisrael, not enough water. Baruch Hashem for the desalination plants that are in Israel today, which have actually obviated a lot of the water issues in Eretz Yisrael. That's part of the miracle of modern technology. You know, it's a time, sometimes people believe that with modern technology, you could say we're coming closer and closer to Yemos HaMashiach. Because all of the problems that humanity has faced in the past are now being alleviated through these modern technological advances. Eretz Yisrael also doesn't have the same dire concerns about water as it used to. But yet you see that Egypt, as far as the topology, as far as the geography, as far as the weather, all of this makes it a superior land. And therefore, using a logical argument, they said as follows. Egypt was used in the making of the covenant regarding Eretz Yisrael's boundaries. Yet, it is forbidden to return from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. How much more, then, does this apply to other lands? Now, what the rabbis are essentially saying over here is that if the Torah does not permit you to go from Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Mitzrayim, then surely the Torah will not permit you to go from Eretz Yisrael to other lands. Because after all, Egypt is considered to be the greatest of all the lands that are outside of Eretz Yisrael. And if the Torah will not even allow you, will not even give you a heter, so to speak, to go from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim, then surely the Torah will not give you a heter to go from Eretz Yisrael to other lands. Now, it's important to underscore that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is understanding this statement of the rabbis in a unique way. Not all the rabbis understand the pasuk in the same way that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi understands it. So I just want to spend a couple of minutes just understanding the way he's understanding the Medrash and the way that he understands the Pasuk. The Torah says that it's not permitted to go back to Egypt. And where do we know this from? So you have in your, I just gave out a little handout just with two sources. The Torah says, Rak lo yar belo susim, in Parsha Shoftim, in the book of Devarim, the Torah says that a king is not allowed to amass too many horses. V'lo yashiv es ha'am mitzrayma l'ma'an harbosus. nor is he allowed to return his people to Egypt in order to amass an army of horses. V'Hashem amar lachem, and after all, Hashem has told you, lo so sifun lashuv baderech hazeod. You shall never go back on that pathway ever again to go back to Egypt. That's the source for us knowing that it's prohibited for a Jew to return to Egypt. Now, this is problematic based on what our knowledge of Jewish history. Where did the Rambam live for most of his life?
In Egypt.
Where did great rabbis, Rav Ovadia Yosef, live for the earlier part of his life? In Egypt. A number of great rabbis throughout Jewish history lived in Egypt. What heter, there was a great Jewish community in Alexandria. There was a great Jewish community in Cairo. What heter, on what basis was it permissible for these great communities to reside in Egypt? So there's a lot of discussion about this. And the way that the Rambam and others seem to understand it is that there's only a prohibition of leaving Eretz Yisrael in order to go specifically to Egypt. There's a special prohibition of taking the same route, a direct route from Egypt, just like the Jews traveled from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. It is forbidden for a Jew to reverse that route. But that's not, you know, there's so many different ways of understanding it. If you look at the Pasuk, it seems that the Torah is trying to discourage you from going back to Egypt because it'll corrupt you. That's really the way that some of the Meforshim understand it. If you take a look, for example, at the Malbim, that he says, V'chazal b'sifri pirshu kamo shetirgum Yonasan ben Uziel, that our sages understand this Pasuk the way that Targum Yonasan understands it. Lo yiskun le susvan, that a king should not amass too many horses, Dilma yirkavun rav revane alehon, because we're worried that he'll take all of his officers, he'll give each one a horse, everyone will have his own horse, and we'd be very live in the lap of luxury, so to speak, because everyone's got their own horse. V'yis ga'un, and they'll become arrogant. V'yis batlu mipisgame oraisa, and they will therefore no longer practice the laws of the Torah faithfully because of their arrogance. It's almost like saying that if everyone has his own car, you know, look how destructive this could become. If everyone has their own mode of transportation, then society, when it becomes too luxurious, causes people to turn away from Torah. And as a result, this will be terrible. Why? Because v'yichavun chovat galuta l'mitzrayim. Because what happens when the Jewish people commit sins and they're living in Eretz Yisrael? What have we learned from the past couple of weeks? That they are expelled from the land. They are expelled from Eretz Yisrael. And so what's going to happen? They're going to have to be forced back to go to places like Egypt. So therefore, what the Pasuk is telling us is, V'lo yashiva ta'am mitzrayima, and we'll see in the Malbim, he will be the king by amassing too many horses, will be responsible for forcing the nation to have to be expelled from Eretz Yisrael to go to other lands like Egypt. V'Hashem amar lachon, and Hashem has already told you, lo tosifun lemeitav be'orcha hadein tuv, that you have no right to go back in that backwards direction spiritually. Shirot Salomar, what that means is, shal yedei avera zu, that through the sin of living too luxuriously and forgetting about the mitzvahs, this will cause yigrom lahashiv ha'am lemitzrayim begalut. This is going to cause the Jewish people to have to go into galus. U'mashikosav l'man harbosus pirish ba'avur avera shel harbosus. What it means is, the king is, it's not, you're putting the cart before the horse, if I can use that to pun, that play on words. In other words, it's not that you're going to Egypt in order to get horses. It's that your acquisition of horses is going to cause you to go back into Golis and go to Egypt. Thank you. Thank you very much. Umash Akasov, and what the Pasuk therefore says when it says, Vashem Amar Lachem, Perush Vahadvorm Kal Vachomer, that the last part of the Pasuk which says, Hashem has told you, do not go back on that pathway ever again, you can make the following logical argument. Halo El Mitzrayim Amar Hashem, that when it comes to Egypt, God told you, Shalot Tosifun Lashuv Baderech Hazeh, that Hashem said, I promise you'll never go have to go back to Egypt. But despite Hashem's promise, uvakolzet tigrom ha'avira shetiglu l'sham. But even despite that promise that Hashem made, I took you out of Egypt and you're never going back, but that's a conditional promise. Thank you so much. It's a conditional promise. It's not absolute. It's not an absolute guarantee that you're never going back to Egypt. You'll never have to go back to Egypt if you behave yourselves in Eretz Yisrael. And yet you see that sin can cause you to go back to Egypt. The kol shekein shetiglu al yedezeh lishar aratzot she'im berit keruta. Then surely if God will actually go against his promise of not sending you back to Egypt, but through sin that covenant can be broken, then surely you could end up having to go into galut in other places in the world, like Canada or Europe or South America or wherever, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So you see that that's the way that the Yonatan ben Uziel reads the pasuk. It's not that there's a specific commandment that you're not allowed to go back to Egypt. I mean, after all, like the Ramban on this pasuk points out, it's perfectly legitimate for a person to go to Egypt for mercantile purposes. If you need to trade with Egyptians, it was well documented in the Gemara that the people used to go to Alexandria all the time. That was a trading center. It was a place where, like, all different cultures in the world used to go to Alexandria to buy and sell and things like that. Jews would do that all the time. So there's no prohibition of actually traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. The prohibition is don't do averos that are going to cause you to have to go back into galus. And one of those destinations of galus is going to end up being Egypt. So you see, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has a one way of interpreting the pasuk. But he's making a point. His point is that despite the fact that Egypt is a prime piece of real estate, and if there was one place that you would want to go to outside of Israel, it would be Egypt because of the great climate and the great topology of Egypt, nevertheless, it's forbidden to return from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. How much more so is it forbidden to go from Eretz Yisrael to other lands? That's the point he's making. Once you live in Eretz Yisrael, you're never allowed to leave. And there are poskim who hold of this. That's why they say, and no one knows for sure whether this is accurate or not, but they say that the reason why the Lubavitcher Rebbe of blessed memory never visited Eretz Yisrael was out of a concern that he might be obligated to never leave once you go. Now we, of course, don't go according to this psak. We regularly visit Eretz Yisrael, and we regularly leave Eretz Yisrael after visiting. But it's important to understand that there's certainly the value that needs to be absorbed. How can you leave Eretz Yisrael? How can you leave? And I hope you're like me, that you feel that way every time you get on the plane at 1 o'clock in the morning in Tel Aviv, right? And you gotta, when it's time to fly back, you say to yourself, what am I doing getting on this plane? How can I leave Eretz Yisrael? That's the sentiment that Rabbi Yehuda Levi is trying to evoke. Yes?
Couldn't it be that Hashem is saying we shouldn't go back to Egypt because we were so persecuted there? And not that it's we would want to go back because it's prime real estate, but that you're not going to have to go back to the place that treated you so badly. No?
Well, again, that's not the way that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is learning this medrash that he's quoting from the Sifri. He's saying that Chazal are extolling Egypt. But you're right. The way you look at the pasuk at face value is that Hashem promised you'll never have to go back to Egypt. I'll never put you back in that place ever again. So how could you voluntarily want to go to Egypt to get horses?
Right, like the way I feel about Germany, you know, that I'd never want to live there.
Yeah.
I would imagine that they felt that way about Mitzrayim.
I would imagine you're right, yeah. That's the way I would look at the pasuk as well, but he's looking at it from a different perspective, because you know that quite often the Jewish people, when they were in the Midbar, said,
if only we were back.
Nitana rosh v'nashuva Mitzrayim. Let's go back. Zacharnu es hadaga. We remember the fish and all the good stuff that we used to eat there. So you see that the Jews had nostalgia, despite the fact that they were slaves. They were nostalgic about living in Egypt, the good old days in our homeland, you know.
But if you do think of it that way, that they wouldn't want to go to back to Egypt because it was so bad, then that Kal Vahomer doesn't really apply.
You're right. You're right. I agree. I'm just saying that you have to read it in a certain. You have to read the Medrash in a certain way in order to learn the pasuk the way Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is learning the pasuk. Correct. There are many times when Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has a unique way of looking at a medrash or a pasuk to be able to advance his position, and this is one of those examples. Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
I wanted to tell something. When you leave Israel nowadays, I think we leave it physically, not emotionally. When you go on the plane,
yeah,
you never leave Israel. I know yourself. I know myself. You know, I never leave it emotionally. I'm always my Israel is in my heart and my thought. So,
are you trying to justify leaving Israel?
Because when people ask, when we came to Canada 34 years ago, you know, people ask why you came here. Was a very nasty question. It was like when we came in, we were considered like they call it neforet shel mushot. I don't know, like the dirt of the earth.
That's not nice.
Well,
of course, that's
okay,
not nice.
And nobody has to judge. And in Israel,
right,
they thought that we traded. They told a story about my husband that he took money from the comp from there in the Aaron Drastid where he worked, and they. We heard another rumor that he ran with a young woman, and I was chasing him with the three young kids. Yeah, nothing else. We had few rumors.
I'm glad the rumors were only rumors.
Was okay. It Yehuda Halevi who said, "We be from Israel, and we just so from Arab"?
Yes, that's
him. So that's exactly what you just said.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But at the end of his life, what did he do? He wasn't content just having his heart in Eretz Yisrael. He felt he needed to actually physically be there. Yes?
Isn't there also a tradition that if somebody dies in Israel, they're really not supposed to be buried in their original country? They're supposed to be buried in Israel?
Yes, we're going to get to burial now in the next paragraph. Yes, that's true. So here's the next part in paragraph number 5. They also said, anyone who is buried in Eretz Yisrael is regarded as if he is buried under the altar of the temple. Now, what does that mean, is if you're buried under the altar of the temple? So, as I quote from the Otzar Nechmad commentary, he says, this means that the earth of Eretz Yisrael is able to atone for the deceased, just as the altar in the temple was able to atone through the karbanos that were brought upon it. So there's a certain atoning feature of the soil of Eretz Yisrael. Now, we know that when a person's body decomposes in the grave, that, in a sense, that decomposition expiates sin, that actually atones for sin that the person may have committed with his or her body during their lifetime. But Eretz Yisrael has that additional feature that, again, it has. There's an inherent kedusha for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the soil itself of Eretz Yisrael, so that it has an additional factor that makes it almost like being brought as a korban on a mizbeach when you're buried in Eretz Yisrael, that's a very, very powerful thing. By the way, you know what Beethoven is doing right now? He's decomposing. But anyway,
That's an old joke.
Yeah.
More of an aside question: is there something about taking the earth from a beloved's grave and putting it in your grave? Is there anything about that?
I'm not familiar with that practice.
Okay.
I don't even
know if it's a practice. But
I don't know. There is a custom of taking earth from Eretz Yisrael and placing it in the place where the person is buried. Yeah.
What does the O-N mean?
Otzar Nechmad. There are two primary commentaries that I've relied on in my translation of the text. Mm-hmm. They are Otzar Nechmad, which was Rabbi Yisrael Zamushitz, and the Kol Yehuda, which is Rabbi Yehuda Moscato. The Otzar Nechmad is from the 18th century, and the Kol Yehuda is from the 16th century. Interestingly enough, the Otzar Nechmad had a very, very famous disciple. He had a very, very famous disciple by the name of Moses Mendelssohn that was a student of Rabbi Yisrael Zamushitz. And perhaps one of the reasons why is because in order to really understand the Kuzari properly and to write a an apt commentary to it, you needed to understand, you needed to be extremely worldly, you needed to know Aristotelian philosophy, you needed to know Neoplatonic philosophy, you needed to know mathematics, you needed to be a really well-trained person in many, many disciplines and areas of knowledge. And it could be that Rabbi Yisrael passed this on to some of his students who, during this time in the mid to late 18th century, where there was this Haskalah, this enlightenment, so to speak, in the secular world, which is now becoming more accepting of Jews. This may have caused, you know, the opportunities for some students to go away from tradition to one degree or another. Okay, that's an aside. Okay, so the rabbis praise someone who dies in Eretz Yisrael in contrast to a person who was transported there after death. So what we're going to see from Yehuda Halevi is that he is critical of the practice that so many Jews do, which we actually encourage Jews to do, which is to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He says it's not so good. He says it's much better to die in Israel than to die in Chutz La'aretz and have your remains transported there. He says, they said there is no comparison between Eretz Yisrael's protective power over a living person and its protective power over someone deceased. Eretz Yisrael will do great things for your corpse, but it'll do much greater things for you when you're alive. So if you have the opportunity, then you should go. And although Eretz Yisrael has protective power even over someone deceased, the rabbis nevertheless stated that in the case of someone who had the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael during his lifetime but opted not to, it is forbidden to transport such a person to Eretz Yisrael after his death. They said that God declares, during your lifetimes you placed my inheritance as an abomination. It's a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. You disregarded, you deprecated Eretz Yisrael because you never really made the strong effort to go there. And during your deaths, you have come and defiled my land. So you're adding tumah to Eretz Yisrael by bringing a corpse to Eretz Yisrael. So you see that this is a critical position on those who choose to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And yet, in order to assuage anyone who has the desire to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, including myself, and I'm not currently living in Eretz Yisrael, so the Rambam addresses this point in footnote 160. Nevertheless, writes Rambam, the great sages of the diaspora still used to transport their dead to Eretz Yisrael. You may learn this from Yaakov, our patriarch, and Yosef, the righteous, both of whom had their remains transported from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. So we have precedent for this, that even people who lived most of their lives in Chutz La'aretz still felt justified to have their remains transported post-mortem to Eretz Yisrael. Now, that's a comforting thought from the Rambam, but it's not completely comforting, I have to confess. Why is it not completely comforting? Can anyone think why the analogy that we would want to make between ourselves and Yaakov and Yosef is not completely apt?
Well, Yaakov went to be with his son and his children. Mm-hmm. Yosef was taken there, so that wasn't his...
They were forced to live in Chutz La'aretz. Yosef was forced to live there because he was sent down there as a slave and then became the viceroy and understood that he had a divine role to play in living in Chutz La'aretz. As a matter of fact, our sages seem to indicate that he wouldn't even have had the option of making Aliyah because Paro needed Yosef. He was too ensconced in a position of power and leadership to just pick up and leave. That would have been perceived as an act of mutiny, and probably the Egyptians would never have let him leave. And when it comes to Yaakov, well, God spoke to Yaakov. You know, Yaakov didn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael even after he discovered that Yosef was alive. But Hashem told him, Al tira meirada mitzrayim. Don't be fearful of going down to Egypt. It's the right thing for you to do. You know, so if you've heard a divine voice recently telling you, it's okay, stay where you are, you don't need to go to Eretz Yisrael. If you've heard that voice, then you should feel no guilt in living in Chutz La'aretz.
I feel guilty.
But You know, but that's the thing, is that sometimes the voice is there. Sometimes you can justify the voice, because sometimes Hashem does tell you, no, this is where you belong right now. And there are times when you can make that justification. Every person has to make that determination on his own or her own. No one can tell you that you don't belong here. What I can tell you is, you should think about whether or not you belong here. That's the but you have to think about it, and you have to make that determination, do I belong here or not? And if you come to the conclusion, yes, this is where I belong, I need to be here for whatever reason, fine. So then you're like Yaakov or Yosef, who couldn't leave, right? But you have to think about it. That's the benefit of learning a passage like this, is to say to yourself, listen, is this what my fate is going to be? Am I going to live out my natural life in Chutz La'aretz, only to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? Or do I have the ability to change that destiny and to make Aliyah? That's the question that only you can answer. And we'll hold it here for today.